Ethan probably doesn't realize it, but that was one of my dad's favorite songs to lead. I hadn't sung that one in a while, so I appreciate that one. I want to start a new series tonight in the book of Hebrews. When we were looking at the subject of Rahab the other night, it reminded me of her being mentioned in Hebrews as one of the what we call the heroes of faith. And want to start a series tonight regarding faith and the heroes of faith that we see in the book of Hebrews. So tonight will be an introduction in upcoming weeks. Not sure that we'll do this every Sunday night, but in upcoming Sunday nights we'll be looking at these different characters and what we can learn from each one of them. So it's pretty well known that sometimes in times of great difficulty, you know, people look for heroes. I mean, there's been a couple of movies here and there written about heroes, and so, you know, nobody's usually looking for Superman to fly out of the sky and save them. I hope that you're not, because it's not going to happen. But you know, but people are not looking for that when things are going well, right? I mean, it's in a time of disaster. It's in a time of peril when somebody is looking for someone to come save them. You know, unfortunately, this past week, that false alarm in Hawaii caused people to think that there was peril, and they started to look for some place to hide, some place to go. And I can't imagine what that must have been like for that 30, 40 minutes that it took for it to be well known that it was a mistake. But in that time of crisis, you know, you look for heroes and expect that's the time when they might lend a hand. So in this series, we want to look at what we commonly refer to as heroes of faith, because it was through their faith that they were able to overcome difficulties in life. But before we can actually, you know, get looking at them individually, I want to see why they are recorded for us. What is the purpose of the Hebrew writer in recording this section of Scripture in chapter 10 and chapter 11 of Hebrews, describing these that lived in the past? So I want you to look, first of all, in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, starting in verse 32, and we'll read verses 32 and 33. But recall the former days, after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those so treated. So what we see here is that this audience that's being written to here, they had endured persecution. They were enduring deep suffering. And you know, we often want to, when we look at those who are suffering, we look at that and we compare it to the suffering that we might go through. And so sometimes we can look to these types of situations, and it might help us when we're going through suffering. And sometimes we might think that, well, that person hasn't suffered as much as me. And many times when we are suffering, we think that we're the only ones that have undergone something like that, or that somebody may try to give us advice and say, well, you know, they don't know, they have not hurt as much as I have. And sometimes the advice or encouragement that others may offer to us, we don't really accept, because we think that, well, I'm the only one that's ever been through this. But you know, what kind of suffering had the Hebrew Christians endured? Many of them, after they had been baptized, it said that they endured a hard struggle with sufferings. Some of them had been abused with insults publicly, it says. Some had been physically mistreated and afflicted. And certainly, when we look back at the suffering of many in the first century, we know that they did endure quite a bit, especially when we compare it to any suffering we've gone through. But when they personally endure those kind of things, it may be, as the Hebrew writer says, they were also closely connected with others that might have gone through the same thing. Even if they personally had not gone through it themselves, if they were well acquainted or close to someone else who had been suffering, it's, you know, it's like a parent seeing their child in pain. It's hard to see a child suffer. You wish that you could be enduring the pain yourself instead of them having to do it. And the same type of thing here, the Hebrews could have been close, it could have been a relative or close friend that might have had to endure this type of mistreatment, as it says in verse 33. Sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and affliction, and sometimes being partners with those so treated. So you're either getting the suffering yourself, or you're closely associated with somebody that has. So that probably includes just about everybody that would be acquainted with one situation or the other. Some of the Christians in that day had been arrested. They had been placed in the prison. They had property taken. They had had possessions that had been plundered and seized. And you think about how demoralizing to have experienced such a severe trial, especially if it was coming upon you because you were a child of God. And I wonder sometimes how many of us could endure such mistreatment and still put your trust in God. But that's what the Hebrew writer is calling upon them to do. That this is a faith-shaking situation when these types of things are happening. And so they continue to show themselves as being disciples of Christ. And those disciples of Christ wanted to have compassion upon others that were enduring suffering as well. So one thing that can be helpful for a child of God is that you can accept some of these temporary things when you know that there's something not temporary coming up. That you can accept the plundering of your possessions knowing that you had a better and lasting possession. And so if you keep your eyes on the goal of heaven and the goal of eternal life, then maybe you can endure what's difficult, even if it's something that has shaken you. So the Hebrew writer is giving words of encouragement in this situation. Basically, what he's saying is, do not throw away your confidence because you have a great reward. Don't give up on your faith now because you've endured so much. Don't give up when times are tough and throw in the towel, as we might say sometimes. So that's the question here in the situation. So the Hebrew writer is pointing out that they should have great confidence and great trust in God because of the great reward that will be of their benefit if they continue to trust in the Lord. That reward is greater than anything that they may have lost. If they've lost relationships, if they've lost personal possessions, or loved ones, or whatever it might be, that they need to have endurance because of the promised reward if they continue to do the will of Christ through those difficulties. So they need to have that type of attitude. So faith is something that is the foundation of our hope. And that's what we see for us here in the book of Hebrews. And faith is what gets you through life's difficulties. And so this is really a defining attribute of those who are righteous. The righteous live by faith. They place their trust in God. And we can't be people that think we're going to get through life without having some hard times and without having our faith tested from time to time. Faith is following through with that foundation, or following through with what it is that you say that you believe. If we believe that God is in control, we need to have confidence in that, and our faith will be tested. But the righteous live by faith. But those who shrink back are going to be destroyed. If you continue reading here in verse 34, "For you had compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plunderings of your property, since you knew that yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yes, for a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who have faith and preserve their souls." So the righteous live by faith. They are ones who are not going to shrink back, because those who do that are going to be destroyed. So basically, what does it mean to shrink back? What does it mean to shrink back?
It means, excuse me, just one second.
Those that shrink back are ones that, you know, go kind of halfway and then they give up or they turn around and go the other direction. You know, what good is it to begin a journey and then halfway there you turn around? Now, I know a lot of people have probably done that because your wife left something at home and you had to go back and do that. Hopefully you weren't too far down the road when you forgot those things, but, or remembered that you forgot those things. But those, from a spiritual standpoint, if we begin the journey with God and then we falter because of some difficult times, when things get challenging, you know, that's very sad. There's really no point in starting the journey. When you think about the seed that fell on the thorny ground and it was choked by the cares of the world, what better seed was it in result than that which fell on the wayside soil and never germinated in the first place? Well, same result. It's dead. Both of them, you know, didn't get to a full-grown plant like they should. So if you start a journey with God and you're not committed to completing it, it's a very sad thing. And the writer of Hebrews confidently states that we're not ones who shrink back. He has confidence that that's not you. You're not ones who shrink back. You're the ones who have faith. And you will have your soul saved because you continue to trust in God. And here, you know, we know that the Scriptures were divided up into chapters and verses by men. And so, you know, we've got this chapter break here between chapter 10 and chapter 11. And it, you know, just going through this study, it reminded me how often we just look at chapter 11 and we don't even think about what was said in chapter 10 leading up to it. But when you look at what chapter 10 has said about the condition that the people were in and how they didn't need to let their faith shrink back, even though that they were in times of great persecution, it really makes chapter 11 mean a lot more when you see what happened, what advice was given in chapter 10. So the writer is talking about our need for faith and has a specific situation in mind. It's these people that are being persecuted, or they have friends that are being persecuted, or loved ones, or brethren. And so the writer has discussed, you know, why we should continue to serve and trust God, because even in the midst of trials, there's things ahead of us that are worthwhile. And so the writer's made three important points: that our faith is going to reap a great reward, the righteous live by faith, and those that let go of that faith are destroyed. And so now the writer tells us why that faith is so important in chapter 11, verse 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Everybody heard that before? I think that's probably one of the verses that if you attended a children's class when you're growing up, that was probably one that you learned pretty quickly. We've heard this verse over and over, and it's very important, and that's why it has been emphasized for us so often, because it helps us to understand the importance of faith. And this passage may be difficult if we don't understand what the word substance means. You know, today substance, you know, may have taken on more of a scientific meaning of an object, or, you know, Play-Doh is a substance, or clay is a substance. And so it that's not what it's talking about. It's something that may be confusing. How is faith the substance of things hoped for? That was hard to understand. Even though I could quote this verse as a child, I don't know that I really knew what it meant. How faith is the substance of things hoped for. Well, you know, Randy, define what that means. I'm glad nobody ever asked me that in those kids' classes. You know, I just want to repeat it. I don't want to have to fool with what it really means. Well, the word substance, like many words, is a compound word. It's the word sub and the word stance. And we have a lot of compound words that start with the word sub, like submarine. Submarine means a delicious sandwich. No, it means something that goes underwater. A submarine goes underwater. Subterranean means underground. And substance means standing under. That's what it means. Substance, faith is the substance. Faith is the standing under of something. Faith stands under our hope. And so when you go to the Greek, you really see exactly what the word means. There defines it this way: a setting or placing under, things put under, a substructure or a foundation. And most of us probably understand that, what a substructure is, that it has to be secure. And if the a lot of times people have problems with their foundation in their house. If the foundation is cracked in the house, may not be sitting straight and could be a problem. Strong's dictionary says that it is a setting under or a support. And so that's what it means. That's what substance means. It's something that is under something else. So faith is the substance of things hoped for. Faith is something that girds our hope. It supports our hope. It's the foundation of our hope. And it would be great if that's something that we can understand, because if hope needs to be supported, that's what does it. Faith does that. And so our hope is really only as secure as our faith, is what this means. If you have faith, then that's going to help the hope that you have. And when we look in Hebrews chapter 11 and we read about all these different individuals, one thing that's very much in common is that foundation that they had. We mentioned that in our Bible class this morning, talking about Rahab. What was it that she knew? Well, she knew a lot that the Israelites should have known years and years before they were about to take the land the second time. She knew that the God that the Israelites served was the one true God, the God of heaven and the God of earth. And so she had that kind of faith. And that kind of faith led her to do what she did to assist those spies. Now, if she had no confidence in God and had heard nothing about God and had no respect for God, she would have had no reason not to just blow the whistle on those spies and say, here they are, come and get them from my house. But she had some substance. She had a foundation. And we'll say more about her when we get to other lessons. But what we see about all of these characters is that they had a foundation that gave them reason to act in the way that they did. They had reason for their hope, and that their souls were being preserved, through enduring trials or whatever it was that they were going through. The other phrase that you see here in this passage is the conviction. Faith is the conviction of things not seen. And I could kind of understand that as a kid, that there's a lot of things. What I always thought was, well, there's a lot of things that we read about in the Bible that I haven't seen. And, what I'm trusting is God's description of it, and that there's been witnesses that have seen these things. And so there's a lot of things that I haven't seen, but I have trust through the evidence of others or through the testimony of others that those things actually exist. And that's really what the word evidence means here, is it means conviction, or it means proof. So faith gives us that. It gives us the conviction concerning things that are unseen. Faith is not seeing the seen, and that's not faith when you're seeing the seen, right? It's not hope anymore either. Faith is seeing the unseen. That's how Paul told us in 2 Corinthians to handle afflictions and difficulties. He's in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 17 and 18. For this light momentary affliction is preparing us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. And that's probably one of the hardest things for most people, is to have trust in something that they haven't seen before. And, Paul references that again in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 when he says that we live by faith and not by sight. Do we really? Well, that's the point that the Hebrew writer was trying to make in chapter 10, that there's things that are unseen that are ahead, and if you have trust in what God has revealed, then you can endure these things, because there's a reason for that endurance. There's a reason to have that faith and that hope that you're going to be able to get through this, and it's going to be worthwhile. So when Paul says we live by faith and not by sight, faith gives us the conviction to see the unseen. With faith, we're able to see the goal, even though it's not right here. We're able to see eternal things, and we're able to have hope in the future. In Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, for by it the people of old received their commendation. By faith we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible." You notice what's being said there? Going back to one thing that we reference quite often if we're talking to someone that does not believe in God, one of the things that's referenced quite often is, well, look around you. The way that the body was made and the way that the universe operates and how intricate it is. And it's always been amazing to me that anybody that's going through medical school and is understanding how intricate the body is and how wonderfully designed it is could not believe that there was some kind of intelligent design behind that. Well, you know, that's what the Hebrew writer says, that by faith we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God. How do we know that? Well, you know, none of us were there with a camera. Nobody took a picture of it. We don't have any YouTube videos that we can go back and search for creation of the world and find, you know, where somebody filmed all that happening in real time. It's through faith. It's through faith because of God's testimony that we can see that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. You didn't see it, but you have faith that it happened. And so for many reasons, we believe that testimony from God is true. One version of this portion of Hebrews translates it this way, "For it is for their faith that the men of old stand on record." I thought that was an interesting way of putting it, that the men of old stand on record because of the faith that they had. And they're testifying, they're giving witness, they're going on record to give us testimony of their faith in God. And that's what all of these that are mentioned in Hebrews are doing. They're giving us their record of their testimony. They had faith that brought about conviction in their lives, and you see the actions and the outgrowth of that in the things that they did. The point for us is that we need to have that kind of vision as well. We are very tempted sometimes just to look at what can be seen right in front of us, but we can't look at life that way. We have to look and see things that are not seen. And that's hard, just not to put all your trust in the physical. If that's all there was to life, then we would be most pitiable people. There is something more, and we have to see that. We have to see Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. We have to see the eternal reward that awaits the righteous. We have to see the mercy of God. We have to see the upcoming justice of God. And so these are things that we can describe, that we can read about, but we can't really touch and feel. We can read the record of these things. And the statement here in verse 3, the writer, whoever it was, begins with this event, like I said, that nobody has ever seen. By faith, we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. And so we have to have this kind of foundation in our life. When I began to lose my faith, that endurance that I should have is not going to be there. And what the writer is saying, whenever you get to that point, when you're feeling discouraged, when you're having these problems that all these in chapter 10 are being talked about, you just got to go back to the beginning. Go back to the beginning and look at the Creator of all the universe. That's the foundation of your faith. I believe that is the point here, that when I'm in need of faith and need of endurance, I go back to the creation of the world, because there's only one logical, rational answer for that. And it really is improbable and impractical and impossible when you think about how these things could have come into the universe by time and chance. You know, you've heard all kinds of illustrations on that before in the past, I know, and I heard another one the other day where somebody talked about taking all the parts of a watch and putting them in and taking them apart and putting them in a bag and shaking them until they all came together and gave perfect time. Well, it would never happen. You could shake the bag forever and dump the parts out, and it's never going to become a workable watch. And that is a very simple invention. Oh, I couldn't build one myself, but when you compare it to what the universe does and what the earth does and what the human body does, you know, a very simple mechanical instrument. The creation is being referenced here as an unseen event, that there's no one that was there except God and Christ, and we have to accept it by faith. It's rational faith, but it's still faith, and it certainly is a great foundation of our faith when we think about the creation of the world. Faith is the foundation for our hope. Your hope in God and your conviction in the unseen, it's all directly related to your faith. If you find that your hope is weak, it all has to do with your faith. If your hope is weak, then your faith is weak. If you find that your conviction is wavering, then your faith is probably shallow and wavering itself. The series of lessons that we're going to look at are designed to help build our faith. That's exactly what they were designed for when it was first expressed by the Hebrew writer to those that may have been faltering because of things that were going on around them. Faith is what gets us through life's difficulties. When it says that you have need of endurance, how is our endurance going to be strengthened? It's going to be strengthened by a strong faith. And it needs to be added to make it stronger. Because there's all kinds of things competing today to try to take that away from us, to try to destroy our hope and cause it to come crashing down. And God's righteous are those who live by faith. We need deeper faith to help us be more righteous. Too often when people live by sight, they make decisions in a way that they really have blinders on. They're looking for the best interest of their physical needs rather than their spiritual needs. You know, when we get together in the congregation, or whether it's in the workforce or wherever it might be, and people talk about, well, here's something that we ought to do. It may be that one person thinks about what's best for them, but then another person talks about, well, you know, this, we need to think about some other factors. And when we start thinking about things around us, it helps us to have a deeper understanding. And when we talk about the righteousness that we can gain living by faith, it all comes from not thinking just on the physical and not thinking about our own immediate needs. Those that are pronounced righteous by God don't live on an island. They look beyond the immediacy of their physical life, and they look at the spiritual impact. Again, look at what the writer says in Hebrews chapter 10. If you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yes, for a little while, and the coming one will come and will not delay. It's talking about, you know, what's in the future that you're not seeing. That's the reason that you don't give up. That's the reason why you continue to endure much in your life. So as we go through these lessons in Hebrews chapter 11, I hope you will remember what was said here at the end of chapter 10, that these are people that somewhat, you know, some of them were beaten down and their faith was at a low point and they felt discouraged. And the whole meaning behind chapter 11, talking about these heroes of faith, is not to give us, you know, a lesson series or just to give you a list of people that had faith. There was a purpose in that. The purpose was to build up their faith. That, look, here's what these others did that could see past the nose on their face. They all did what they did because they saw something else. And each one of them, those kind of comments are made about these people, so that they did not give up on God. They did not forfeit their reward because they didn't quit when trials came, because they knew what was ahead. So I hope this will be an interesting series to you. I'm looking forward to going through it myself. We need faith, and we need our faith to be built up so that we can have the courage and strength to stand up in this world against things that they're trying to distract us from what this life is really supposed to be about. If we can help in any way to do that, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.